The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Wait for it. This is our shout out to both Hamilton the Musical and our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. I'm Ben.
Ta-da! You're
Wait For It a Hamilton reference?
Yes.
You know, I tried watching it on TV. I guess it came out on Disney Plus.
Yeah, you always say you don't like it.
I enjoyed it, but I didn't enjoy it enough to finish it. Does that make sense? You ever
sure.
experienced
yeah.
that with a series or something? Mm-hmm. A lot of content out there. I mean, maybe a little less so now. By the way, good job with the strike, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you did that. That was all Ben's idea. But, we've been talking a lot about labor organization and things like that, and it is cool to see something as basic and time-tested as a strike do the damn thing. With the WGA finally agreeing to some pretty basic demands.
WGA, what?
A lot of the smaller distributors and studios had long since agreed to. That was the part that kind of always made me scratch my head a little bit.
That's right, yeah. And these things often occur in phases, right? So now the SAG union, the Actors Guild, is in play. The United Auto Workers are in play. This is pretty fascinating stuff. We also want to be careful because our returning guest, Alex S., is here. And as we know, she will crush any untoward labor action.
That's right. Yeah. Total buster.
Total Sith Lord.
Yeah.
That guy.
No, we're kidding. We're joking.
Sorry. Joking. She stood up and looked at us.
And left. Stormed out. Presumably to go bust up some strikes.
Alex is the best. We're all so glad you tuned in, folks. This week is a special two-part episode. We're doing that Hamilton reference entirely because of one of the tortured antagonist slash co-protagonist Aaron Burr, whom our pal Max Williams lovingly or just regularly refers to as America's drunk uncle.
Yeah, it's funny. There was a Oreo, I think I've mentioned this before, but there was an Oreo commercial from way back in the day where it was like a historian or something and who was asked a question of like who shot Alexander Hamilton, and he's got a mouthful of Oreos and no milk, and he goes, and no one understands him. I can't remember what the takeaway is, that he comes off looking like an idiot or he lost out on some sort of grant or something, but I remember Aaron Burr. That's all I remember.
It's funny because Aaron Burr is in many ways a footnote in American history, which is funny because he came up in that whole Founding Fathers story. And I was surprised. I looked through our archives extensively. We had to have done an episode on Aaron Burr.
We have not.
We have not. I'm like, okay, we have to, because Aaron Burr, every step of his life is just wild.
Yes, it very much is. It doesn't matter whether or not you're a fan of Hamilton, really, and nothing, no musical is for everyone, but there is just so much about Burr that doesn't make it into the story, because the story is not Burr, it's Hamilton. So we've talked, like you said, about other people who were considered influential founding father types, but never quite made it to POTUS level. Aaron Burr is on that list, along with folks like William Jennings Bryan, Henry Clay. Burr is a war hero. He's a senator. He gets all the way to vice president. And at the time of his demise, he had money problems. He had been tried for treason. He'd alienated a lot of his friends, or they had died, because that, you know, could very much happen. But maybe we start, what do you think, Noel? We start at the beginning, because like our pal Max said, this is a wild ride. Ride. I don't know why I'm doing echoes.
It's okay. It's okay. Yeah, it's in the parlance of hip hop. So let's talk a little bit about his early life. He was born in this time in American history, you'd be hard pressed not to be born into some kind of military circumstance.
Sure.
You know, your parents either fought in the war or you grew up with aspirations to be a soldier, whatever it might be. His father, Aaron Burr Sr., was a Presbyterian minister. And he was the second president of the College of New Jersey, which later became Princeton University. His mother, Esther, which is a lovely name that you don't hear much anymore these days. I'm a big fan of Esther. Esther Edwards Burr, the daughter of Jonathan Edwards, who was a theologian in his own right. Aaron Burr was born February 6, 1756 in Newark, New Jersey. We're talking Sopranos country. Burr's father sadly passed when Aaron was only a year old, and then his mother passed the following year. So he was orphaned by the age of two.
Ouch.
That's no good.
No.
And he and his sisters moved in. Thankfully, they didn't have to, you know, move into an orphanage. Their grandparents took care of them. But by the time Burr was 4 years old, geez, you hate to hear it. His grandparents died as well.
Sure.
So for much of his youth, he did spend living with an uncle by the name of Timothy Edwards.
I don't know why that's a hilarious name to me. It's one of those names that's hilarious if someone is yelling it to indicate a person is in trouble. Timothy Edwards?
Yeah, well, it's like first name.
Timothy?
Yeah, it's like one of those first name situations. Edward Edwards would be fun, too, but
Timothy would be hilarious.
So, like Tony. For the longest time, I thought his name was pronounced Tony Tone,
The
last one,
spelled,
you know, because it was like, you know, he's got mad tone or whatever, but no, it's Tony Tone.
Or Major. Major, another
major,
one.
Yeah. Major, minor, major, laser, all of the majors. So Timothy was a pretty successful fellow. Again, a very revered profession at the time, and still today, though maybe slightly less revered, a little more reviled. He was a lawyer, and he did spare no expense, as John Hammond of Jurassic Park fame would say, in young Aaron's education. He hired tutors from Princeton, or at least who had received their education at the prestigious university, to educate him until he himself could follow in the family legacy and attend Princeton University.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even back then, of course, Princeton is a big deal. He's 11 years old when he applies to Princeton for the first time. He's turned away because Princeton, you know, very reasonably says, aren't you 11 years old? So he waits for...
Child!
Right. He waits for 2 years, age 13. He reapplies, and he is accepted. He matriculates into Princeton, where he studies theology until he's about 19 years old.
Silly question, sure. Maybe. I guess there are no silly questions. We are a bit of a silly show. Fair. They didn't really have the system of, like, elementary, middle, and high school in this era that we would know today.
No.
So you'd be more likely, it'd be sort of a gray area as to when the appropriate age to go to higher education might be, right?
You just have to have the money and be persuasive.
And the chops.
Have the connections. Yeah. You know, this is back in the time where your higher schooling is like I'm going to go live with the guy in town who makes glass. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be
much
the
more
glassman.
Of an apprentice in trades. Master, tradesman kind of situation.
So he studies theology. And at age 19, he says,
I don't believe in God.
God's fine, I guess. I'm going to study the law. So I'm moving to Connecticut, the Constitution state. And the colonial protests are happening around this time. You're getting reports of the Continental Congress, and he's got an itchy foot on this. You know, he's thinking, I should be stepping somewhere. I should be doing something. How long can this unsustainable situation continue? He learns about Lexington and Concord in 1775, and so no longer a theologian, no longer a law nerd. Burr becomes a soldier.
Yeah, quick props to American Battlefield Trust. Sure. If you go to their website, battlefields.org, you can donate or even become a member. But there's fabulous biographies of a lot of great Americans.
Including Aaron Burr. And also, of course, shout out to Britannica. They're solid, man. Britannica.com as a source.
Remember Encyclopedia Britannica? The physical ones?
Yeah, I do.
You buy them from a salesman?
They were wildly expensive.
They really were. But it was almost like that was an investment in your future. Now it's laughable because that's all like on the internet for
free.
Well,
it's still classy. We had a set of encyclopedias.
Gilded text along the spines, mm-hmm. all that good stuff.
We had a set of encyclopedias way back in the day. And I remember my dad telling me that these encyclopedias were printed in this year.
Mm-hmm.
Our knowledge, therefore, in this house goes to this year and stops mm-hmm. because we're not buying another set of encyclopedias.
Yeah, sort of like how Ridiculous History ends at apartheid.
Yeah, mid-90s. Mm-hmm. We said that's what we consider history.
We're flexible, though, you know.
Well, yeah, and Burr, at this point, to be fair, he had no idea what was going to happen. As we mentioned, this was a very dangerous time
right.
to be a soldier, especially in the, well, in general, but especially in the Continental Army. His career there, however, was long and prosperous. He thrived. He also served under a buddy of his who would later become famous, Benedict Arnold, mm-hmm. a.k.a. one of America's Bad Bens.
That's right.
And Ben Shapiro.
That's right. And in that bio on battlefields.org, they make the point that Benedict Arnold, of course, became sort of like Brutus, you know, a bit of a pejorative. Like, you Benedict Arnold, that sure. means you're a traitor, right? Or Brutus. Burr himself has sort of come to occupy that space, although, you know, one could argue that it's a little more complicated than that, as it is with any of these folks. But the headline's usually more interesting than the article.
Well, yeah, you know, that's why you print the retractions later in the paper.
Yeah, people usually skip right past those.
Yeah, so I think that's an excellent point, man, because we do have to remember there's a lot more nuance to these situations. We have the benefit of retrospect, so we can look back and say, like, clearly this guy, you know what I mean? It's like watching Cabin in mm-hmm. the Woods again.
Right.
And then you pick up on stuff.
All the things. Yeah, little clues, the little mm-hmm. Easter eggs. Yeah, or watching any twist-oriented film again, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
You're kind of rewarded. It's actually kind of fun. I've been watching a lot of the back catalog of David Fincher lately. He's a big fan of the twist.
Sixth Sense. That's Bruce Willis the whole time.
True. And that's Forrest Gump's little son as well. Yeah, it's right. actually a shared universe. Nobody talks about that.
No one talks about that, but that is an episode for another day.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
El Camino, right?
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally. But
it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
The stuff that Burr does during the war, partially due to his better than average background and partially due to his schooling, he quickly enters the inner circles of the army, the halls of power. Mm-hmm. He becomes an aide-de-camp, which I guess is just like your boy. Your sidekick?
It's like the best boy in movies.
Your valet, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He marches. He participates in this march along with a lot of volunteers. Well, actually, he was one, excuse me, in this situation. He was a volunteer, marched 350 miles through the northern wilds of Quebec to invade Canada, which I always just think is funny, you know, because we think of Canada as just being our, like, gentle, docile neighbors to the north. And the idea of invading them just seems mean. So apparently, though, this was not a particularly fortuitous expedition for the American Army, but it was a positive outcome for young Aaron Burr. When the soldiers got to Quebec, Burr, as he said, was appointed General Richard Montgomery's aide-de-camp. Burr became a quite storied, you know, army hero in the wake of this battle. And there were reports that General Montgomery had died in the arms of his best boy, young Burr, and that Burr actually tried to save Montgomery's body. But unfortunately, the brutal winter conditions prevented him from doing so. Another Hamilton, member of the Hamilton coterie, Theodore Sedgwick, wrote a lot of letters to Burr describing him as being, this funny sounding now, out of context, being young, gay, and enterprising, and martial genius.
Yeah, totally different meaning now. He's saying you got to go get him attitude. You're always in a good mood.
Upbeat.
You're thinking out of the box. You're good at military
sharp-minded
tactics. And then Burr goes and works just for a bit
with old straight seahorse teeth himself, George Washington, who will later become president of the United States. Burr gets, he's not there too long because he likes being the best boy. So he goes to work with General Israel Putnam as his aide-de-camp, and he becomes a, this is weird, he becomes a crucial leader in a famous retreat. When the American forces have to leave New York, he's one of the guys who's like the best at running away.
Yeah, run away. In New York, he could and did become a new man. That's my only Hamilton reference that I'm going to drop. Maybe I could say not throwing away my shot. I know that one, too.
That's true, yeah. That big, that long shout out to Eminem.
Mm-hmm. I think I only made it through like act one. And look, don't get me wrong. It is a marvel. It's beautifully produced. I'm sure it does. And again, I think I was just distracted and then never came back. Or maybe there's somebody with me that didn't want to finish. I can't remember. I'm going to go back to it. Also kind of watching Broadway stuff on TV, it just hits different than seeing it in
sure.
theater.
Sure. You know? I enjoyed it, and it's... I see what you're saying, because when it gets kind of in the weeds of politics, that's where it may lose a lot of people, right? But once it picks back up, it swells. It's epic. I think it's worth it. But also, let's be honest, folks. Too much hype can kill anything.
That may have been part of it, too.
I think that might be what happened to you.
Yeah, I think so, too. Because, I mean, one of my favorite musicals and just about any adaptation of it at all is
Spider-Man.
What is it? Turn Off the Dark? Yeah, that one was a hit. No, Les Miserables, which is also a very in-the-weeds military and kind of political piece. I just love it.
I like the book.
I love the music. I think for me, it's a youth thing. Like, I grew up hearing those songs. My mom was a singing teacher, but I really thought that the film adaptation they did, where everyone sings their own stuff, you know, mm-hmm. I thought that was really well done. And that guy, of course, went on to make Cats, which was not good.
Are you serious? Get out.
What do you mean?
No, I messed with
you. It was bad.
Well, everybody loves a train wreck.
At least the Cats didn't have buttholes like he originally wanted.
You know, maybe that would have put it over the edge.
Pushed it over the edge. Saved it.
Yeah. Best supporting actor is this cat's butthole.
No, we need more realism in these anthropomorphic sex cats.
Guys, yeah. We don't want to break the magic here. These need to be anatomically accurate anthropomorphized cats.
I think they had to remove them in post.
They did. Yeah. It added a huge cost to production. Because it turns out if you are a video editor, you're deep in the CGI, there's not just a remove all buttholes mm-hmm. button.
Yeah, they need to add that to After Effects mm-hmm. or whatever.
Max is nodding vigorously.
I am. And also, you guys have not said anything about my pants.
I saw them, but we had to walk right in.
I can't see your pants.
Walk right in. Set right down.
Oh, man, you monster.
Max, you got your white pants on.
You monster. You rabble.
So Burr is like, one day, this is going to be part of a musical. My life is going to be part of a musical.
However, though, he probably didn't necessarily at this point think that he was going to be the villain.
No.
No one ever does, though, do they? No one ever does.
Right. You know, like Tamer Lane or Timer the Lame was probably thinking, I'm bringing the world together. Alexander the Great was like, look at my street name. Mm-hmm. I can't be that bad.
Check out my white pants.
Pol Pot is like, you know, Saloth Sar sounds a little evil, so I'm going to get more of a name that people will trust.
Is it bad that whenever I hear Pol Pot, I just think pulled pork?
No. Okay. Also, I think it's weird that his name sounds so villainous. Yeah. Our pal Alex is not actually a Sith Lord, but if your name is Saloth Sar, mm-hmm. you sound straight out of Star Wars.
Very true. You definitely have the red lightsaber. Mm-hmm.
And so Burr, again, he's doing his best. I'm joking a little bit about the retreat, but what he figures out is pretty epic. He designs the safest route out of the city, and mm-hmm. he guides 5,000 people to safety. He salvages U.S. artillery, which is incredibly important at this point. And because of this action in 1777, Washington says, Burr, you've earned it, bud. You're officially a lieutenant colonel, which means you will be in command of more than 300 men. He fights off these British raids into New Jersey. He defends a pass at Valley Forge during a really crappy winter in 1777.
Seems on brand.
Yeah. And then there's the Battle of Monmouth. He is defeated at the Battle of Monmouth. And he also gets some mounting health problems because he's been going hard in the paint for a while. So he resigns in 1779 from the Continental Army. He makes another shift.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I remember, I kind of like doing law stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in New York, I can be a new man. I'm sorry. That's all I got. Yeah, he passes the bar in 1782. The New York State Bar opens up his law. What do they call it? Hanging out his shingle. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they say.
Yeah, hang your shingle.
And that's probably where that term came from. You know, they say it in, like, Better Call Saul, but it's probably an old-timey legal term from when you'd literally have a practice and your little sign would be out front, and it would be, like, in the form of a little shingle. So he's set up for lawyering, and he marries a widow, and the couple stays together until her death in 1794. In 1784 and 1785, he gets elected to the state assembly. And then in 89, as we're in the 17s, I'm just going to say 89, he gets appointed attorney general by Governor George Clinton, not of Parliament Funkadelic fame, unfortunately. He could have had some funk in his soul, though. By 91, he has built a very successful political movement against General Philip Schuyler, who is the father-in-law of, ding, 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 Alexander Hamilton.
Wait for it.
Who's then the Secretary of the Treasury.
Yes. And he wins. Burr wins the election, as any fan of Hamilton knows. And Hamilton takes this personally. Burr runs for vice president in 1796. He loses. You can read a lot about the U.S. presidential elections, by the way, especially the election of 1800, on encyclopediavirginia.org. It's well worth the time. Mm-hmm. We're getting to that election in just a second. Here's what you need to know. Burr runs for vice president in 1796. He loses. Ah, boo. It kind of snowballs for him for a second. He doesn't get reelected to the Senate. He loses to Schuyler, and he spends the next 2 years deep in state politics all the way until the 1800 election. It's a grudge match. This is back when, if you ran for president and you got second place, you would be the vice president to your, basically your mortal enemy. So there's a rematch between Adams and Jefferson, and they don't want to be in a situation where Jefferson is Adams' VP. So the parties try to say, all of our teams, all of our electors, you got to be on one page. We got to be unified. On the Federalist side, Adams is going to run with Charles Cotesworth Pinckney, not a superpower name, and Jefferson is going to be running with, you guessed it, folks, Aaron Burr. Oh, and there's no popular vote at this point.
Oh, fun.
Right.
Fun, yeah. So
can I jump in real quick, guys?
Jump on in.
I don't think I've told you guys this story. I think I was saving it for this episode.
You're related to Aaron Burr.
No, I'm not, but this is going to get a little
You are Aaron Burr.
So the wedding I went to in Michigan that I wore these lovely white pants.
They look good. They look good on you.
They're amazing.
And I talked up your white pants in our Labor Day episode.
And you ragged on me. Ben's like, oh, Max only wants to talk about the white pants because he wants us to notice that he's working out. I heard everything you guys said, including that entire concert going on behind you.
Good. And great work on that, by the way.
Oh, of course. But so where I was sleeping at my aunt's house, she moved in this house recently. She needs to do a lot of work, but there's this painting hanging. So her husband's grandfather painted really weird things and no one understands the things he painted. But hanging, watching me sleep every night, was a painting of Aaron Burr. And no one understands why he picked Aaron Burr. And my Uncle Dave is a character. He's just a classic, amazing character. And so being a character, he won't let my Aunt Jennifer take it down. But she wants to burn it because she's like, Aaron Burr sucks and it's weird.
He needs to get Aaron burned. Yeah, that's very weird. That's an odd one. Usually, if you're going to have a political portrait hanging up on the wall, it'd be a Jefferson or a Washington or a Lincoln. Aaron Burr is a little bit of an odd choice, as we'll get to quite soon why.
Yes. Yeah. And no sense in standing on ceremony. Let's dig in here. At this time, the state legislatures appoint electors. Men of letters and learning, the idea went, will surely make the most informed and most advantageous or beneficial choice.
So is this like kind of an early form of the Electoral College?
Very similar, okay. And also, it's intellectually fraudulent to pretend that that is the case. But the Democrats, Republicans, that's Democrat-Republicans, sweep most of the South. They get all the electors from Georgia, Kentucky, South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, all the best states. All the top ones, all the quality ones, all the smooth jazz. Adams is in contrast, he's doing very well in the Northeast. He gets all the votes from Connecticut, Delaware, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Vermont. And because Burr is on the ticket and Burr is a New Yorker, Jefferson wins that state. If you look at the other states at the time, North Carolina, Maryland and Pennsylvania, it's way more mixed. So the Federalists said there might be a tie. We need to figure out how to make sure that doesn't happen. No one wants a tie. Let's go to Rhode Island and we'll have one of our boys cast one vote for John Jay.
Yeah. So all the Democratic Republican electors contrastingly cast their ballots for Jefferson and Burr. And since the electors couldn't indicate a presidential or vice presidential vote specifically,
you just had the name.
Yeah, the result was a tie. And then the winner was going to be determined by a duel to the death. I'm kidding. We'll get to that, though.
Yeah, they had the... they eventually do get to some good dueling, as we'll see. At this point, though, the duel is a lot less physical and a lot more bureaucratic. Under the existing parliamentary rules that they applied, a tie had to be decided by the House of Representatives. Each of the 16 states gets one vote per state. Problem being, the House of Representatives is controlled by the lame duck Federalist government. All the Federalists want to choose in their mind the lesser of two evils. They say, do you like Burr? No. I mean, I don't trust him, but he sure isn't Jefferson. And they're all like, yeah, beat me here, Max. They're all like, yeah, fuck that guy.
Is it still the same way?
Well, I feel it's like very similar, it seems, yeah, like with the Electoral College.
But there are, there's a lot more work going on behind the scenes to prevent a tie.
You know, right. When we're talking all this stuff out loud, it sure sounds a hell of a lot like casino rules, you know, or rules for some esoteric, you know, card game.
Wait till we get to the double down.
Oh, yeah, it's wild, man. Sorry, I'm damaged from Vegas. I'll never be the same. So voting in the House of Representatives starts on February 11th of 1801. And on the very first ballot, Jefferson wins as the choice of 8 of the states, while Burr gets the support of 6. So more than 30 additional votes are held over the next few days with the same, unfortunately, tied results. Bit of a stymie kind of situation there. Alas, around 36 ballots are then cast, with the Federalists in Maryland and Vermont deciding to sit those out, giving those states to Jefferson, who is then elected with Burr as his VP on February the 17th by a majority of 10 states to 4. And Delaware and South Carolina actually cast blank votes, which seems like, what is that, like a
tight
kind of a flex?
Like they were very artsy at that point, you know? It was a message about the dangers of government overreach.
They're just being petty, right?
No, they're being artistic.
Petty.
Artistic.
Petty.
Artistic.
I'm going to cut you out. You say it's just going to be me being petty.
Artistic, artistic, artistic.
We'll Max, see. With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. I don't know why I just hyped you up.
Do
so
the right
about
thing.
That.
Yeah. No, I'm on your side.
You stole the wrong radio this time. That's a reference for just a few people in the audience.
Is that also from Hamilton?
You know what? What is not from Hamilton? Yes, in Max's defense as well, it is clearly a protest vote. It's clearly being the people who say, well, I'm not going to do anything. You know what I mean? It is somewhat petulant, but they probably felt they had no other option. This election, just the massive poop show of this whole thing, is the origin point, the catalyst for the adoption of the 12th Amendment in 1804. The 12th Amendment says, all right, electors, you're still voting, but you're casting separate ballots for president and vice president because those blank votes were just ridiculous. You guys, we're grown-ups. We're starting a new country.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com. Anyway, we've got to get to the duel. And on the way to the duel, it is important to note that Burr was not a bad vice president. He had good judgment. Thomas Jefferson, like many, many other people, did not trust Burr and said, keep that guy out of the White House politics. Don't let him do his job.
His story thus far seems to be one of pretty great competence, at the very least. You know, he was a smart guy. He was a brave guy, it would seem. You know,
I will say when it comes to researching Burr, it's interesting, at least from the sources I've found.
Yeah.
It's either all the way to like, hey, Aaron Burr was actually a very important person to, hey, Aaron Burr was crazy. There's no middle ground. It's really interesting. Which is it's weird. Kind of his story. But I mean, yeah. It's like one of these things, you know, history is written with bias. It is.
Sure.
And we all kind of know where the story somewhat ends, and then when it continues to end further and further on, mm-hmm. 'cause it gets wilder and wilder. But it's interesting because, yeah, it looks like he was just going to be in that list of people, like founding fathers. This guy's very famous and awesome and successful.
There is a Venn diagram between greatness and insanity, however.
That's right.
And I would argue that many, many great people have a much higher likelihood of being what we would consider insane.
A little touched.
To be that ambitious,
totally,
you have to be able to envision that kind of larger than life pursuit for yourself, which means you basically hallucinate your way into success.
Yeah, but then all depending on the outcome, that can either be described as ambition or delusions of grandeur. You know, no one ever says someone who wins and does a good job and goes down in history had delusions of grandeur. No, it was just grandeur. There were no delusions.
Yeah.
They call it ambition, even if they have to step on a few toes, you know, to break the eggs that make the omelet. That's how that expression goes.
Sure, yeah. You led the figure of speech to water.
I made it drink. I waterboarded that figure of speech.
Oh, that's terrible. Don't water. Board yourselves, folks. It's not as fun as it sounds. And Burr is now part of a power divide, right? Jefferson says, I don't like this guy. Keep him out of the White House. You know what I mean? Make him eat lunch in the back. And Burr says, I'm going to run the Senate. And he's pretty good at it. He's a good diplomat. He plays the game of houses, or Das de Mar, as they call it in Wheel of Time. He plays this very well, and he's able to grow people to incentivize or disincentivize them. There's an impeachment trial that comes up for a justice, Federalist Justice Samuel Chase. This was back when bad justices, even Supreme Court justices, could get in trouble.
Ah, those were the days, huh?
Yeah.
Now they're bulletproof. I got to add a really stupid aside.
Ooh, do it.
We've been talking about how, you know, our boy Aaron ended up in some pretty chilly situations.
Old A-bomb,
you know,
yeah.
With the snow, you know, where he had to potentially carry the body of his commanding officer.
Sure, yeah.
But it was too snowy, and then there was another snowy condition. His last name is Burr.
That's worth it. And Andy's Burr Jr. And it's weird, too, because he doesn't have a middle name.
Huh. Or at least that we know of.
Oh.
May have been lost to history. But Jefferson he's grown tired of this, sure. This shenanigans, this yeah. power, you know, these power-hungry vultures of the judiciary. And he decided to try to limit Federalist influence on the Supreme Court by kicking Samuel Chase to the curb. And in order to do that, he had to exploit some of this gentleman's earlier shortcomings.
Sure.
That were, of course, on the record. After the House voted to impeach Chase.
Get him out of here.
Get him gone. His impeachment was, of course, supposed to be decided by the Senate and then presided over by the VP, our guy Burr.
And so Jefferson comes in the background and he's like, look, I don't love you. You don't love me, but we are trying to be on the same team. So do me a solid here. Get this friggin' Sam guy out of office. And Burr says, you know, I hear you. And when people say, I hear you, that means they acknowledge that you're speaking and they're not going to do squat. So he says, I hear you. But then he handles the case as judiciously as possible. And a newspaper that already kind of was beefed up with Burr says the following. He conducted the hearings with the dignity and impartiality of an angel, but with the rigor of a devil.
Wow. Okay. All right. So because of his impartiality, a Democratic Republican majority let Chase off the hook. So this didn't sit well with Jefferson, let's just say.
Yeah.
But it did. I mean, it was a success for Burr in that he made it happen.
Yes.
But politically speaking, was probably not a smart move. I wonder what his calculations were. Did he not see the forest for the trees and that Jefferson was going to be an important man? Did he think it was okay to piss him off because he wasn't going places? That seems like a miscalculation.
Right. Yeah. Burr was very much a calculated dude. And if we had to guess, his impetus or his reasoning was something like, I will prove that even to my political enemies, everyone gets a fair shot.
Which is,
I'm a man of principle.
Admirable.
That's how the law is supposed to work.
It is.
And Jefferson was like, heck no, we're breaking up.
That's right. And you could almost argue that Jefferson was being a little shady by saying, ram it through.
What? No way.
So that's, you know, okay. This is very interesting. So, you know, again, according to Aaron Burr's biography, this victory would kind of be Burr's last, at the very least, last successful political maneuver.
His last big tent item. Yeah, because after this trial, Chase gets off and goes on his merry way, justicing around the land. And Thomas Jefferson says, hear me and hear me now. Aaron Burr will not be my running mate in the election of 1804. And they say, well, who's it going to be, Mr. Jefferson? And he goes, I don't care. And at the same point, concurrently, while Burr is navigating the halls of power, he is increasingly beefed up with his longtime frenemy, Alexander Hamilton. And they are sniping each other back and forth. So there's not really a Twitter, right? There are just zines and there are broadsheets, publications, stuff like that. So these guys are firing shots at each other in the public sphere, in the world of print, and then in the world of oration all the time. In 1800, Burr publishes something called The Public Conduct and Character of John Adams, Esquire, President of the United States. This document is very, very critical of Adams because Adams is a Federalist. And Burr did not write this, by the way. He obtained it. He purchased and published it. The author was Hamilton, and Alexander Hamilton is saying, Aaron, A-bomb, bro, I meant that for just us. This isn't supposed to go out to the whole town. It's not supposed to go out to everyone in America who can read. And then Burr probably said, well, you know, it's like not a lot of people can read.
It's like the historical equivalent of copying the wrong people on an email where you're trash talking said people.
And he did it on purpose.
He did it. Yeah, it was the accidental text on purpose.
Yeah.
From Curb.
Yes,
anybody
exactly.
Remembers
that
episode.
So this was very embarrassing to Hamilton and injured some of his relationships and networking. And then, still then, they did not fight yet. There's just more and more tension, right? And the New York governor's race occurs in 1804. This is when things get, how did Olivia Newton-John put it? Yeah, this is when things get physical.
I was like trying to place that. No, I guess I think of her as in Greece.
Is it? She is the one who's like.
No, yeah, that was more like her. Yeah, that was like her kind of later like disco solo music career. Mm-hmm. I guess I just always think of her as you know, in the Bobby Sox and the poodle skirt and all of that mm-hmm, stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Burr thought that if he won in 1804 the New York governor's race, that he could kind of wrest back some of the power and some of the clout that he had lost in, you know, crossing Jefferson, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, obviously, this accidental text on purpose didn't really bode well for him either, because these men, Jefferson and Hamilton, are very quickly, well, Jefferson already, of course, but very quickly, you know, big-leaguing Burr.
Yeah, and Burr says, forget you guys, I'm running as an independent, and if I win, if I can pull this off, then it's a whole new town, baby. And Burr will be back in business. So it's a risk. It is a calculation. It's a heck of a gamble. And Hamilton is laying awake at night, terrified about this idea. He's like, oh, Burr is in charge of New York. He's going to ruin the whole thing. At this point in my life, he says to himself, I despise and mistrust and hate Aaron Burr. He's a burr in the shoe of America. And Hamilton tries to convince the Federalist in New York not to support Burr at all in any shape, form, or fashion. he wasn't the main person who shut down the election, but he probably didn't help. And so Burr's campaign to be governor of New York fails.
Do you think there was a generalized mistrust of Burr at this point?
100%.
Because he seemed to be a bit of a double dealer, a bit of a you know, two-faced kind of?
Well, maybe not two-faced, but 100% he was. I mean, not for nothing is there that talk less, smile more part mm-hmm. in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And I think you probably watched that part, right?
You might, I can't recall.
Okay. Well, it's a good part.
I neither confirm. Nor deny.
There we go. And he was one of those guys. He was a neither confirm nor deny dude. And that, even when you're behaving with principle, that means that people are going to have a trust deficit with you. The winner of the election is Morgan Lewis, the New York Republican candidate. He is supported by George and DeWitt Clinton, who, despite the name being DeWitt, which feels very Appalachian to me, I can say
that. Yeah, it does.
DeWitt is one of the most powerful Republicans in New York.
And they crush Burr. I mean, this is a bloodbath.
Yeah. I want to do like a dive into the New York Clinton family, because they're like one of the kind of like almost mob style families in early America.
Yeah.
We don't talk about, but they controlled a lot of this country.
And it's funny because they don't show up in a lot of national level grade school textbooks. You have to be from, you know, that specific part of the country
The one with the building and the road named after them, you know, with the endowments and all that.
It
is funny, though, like, you know, exactly. When, you know, I was in Detroit recently, and you probably can think of some of these names, Max, there were some buildings that were named after some people that were obviously very well known in the politics and the history of that part of the country that I have absolutely no knowledge of, and some really fun Midwestern-y sounding names.
Aaron Burr, you were going to rue the day you crossed DeWitt Clinton.
Exactly.
I'm sure that's how that patrician sounded. Yeah, this battle for New York is bad. And on some level, Burr, despite his own miscalculations and his own warts and imperfections and ugly bumps of a career, he says Hamilton is one of the big reasons I lost this election. Hold the phone.
Oi, oi.
We are going to make this a two-parter, which we discussed earlier in advance.
Hello.
Hello.
I don't know what I'm doing.
We're not going to throw away our shot on the British accents.
We shouldn't. We never should. Although there will come a point where one of our characters does have to run away to England and potentially adopt a fake British accent.
Yeah, and that actually happens more than once in this series. So thank you, as always, for tuning in. Please join us Thursday for part two of Aaron Burr, America's Drunk Uncle.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch, so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.